I'm going to preach from here only because I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to read you a story. In fact, if I wasn't already investments, I would grab one of those cardigans that are making their way back into popularity. And I've seen them around campus, right? We'd sit down and it'd be story time with Father Mark. But don't get too comfortable, okay? Because this story is a Russian story, all right? And they never leave you very comfortable for very long. In fact, it's from the great novel from Dostoevsky, The Brothers Karamazov, right? Written in 1880. And it's right after the abolition of serfdom in Russia in the 1860s, okay? So let me set the scene. There's a good and holy priest, Father Zosima, and he's an old monk, a wise old monk, and he's blessing the peasants who have just been released from their sort of indentured servitude. Poverty is high. And he draws all sorts of people, the poor, but also the rich, who are often, even to this day, very poor, very spiritually poor. And so there's a wealthy woman, and she's described as a sentimental society lady of genuinely good disposition in many respects, end quote. She comes up to Father Zosima, and this is where the story begins. She says, "And yet happiness, happiness, where is it? Who can say of himself that he is happy? Let me tell you, Father, what I could not utter last time, what I dared not say. I am suffering and have been for so long. I'm suffering. Forgive me. I am suffering." And in a rush of fervent feeling, she clasped her hands before him. "From what specifically?" said the priest. "I suffer from a lack of faith. The thought of life beyond the grave distracts me to anguish, to terror, and I don't know to whom to appeal and have not dared to all my life. And now I am so bold as to ask you, O God, what will you think of me now?" She clasped her hands. "Don't distress yourself about my opinion of you," said the elder. "I quite believe in the sincerity of your suffering. Oh, how thankful I am to you. You see, I shut my eyes and ask myself, if everyone has faith, where did it come from? And then they say it all comes from terror at the menacing phenomena of nature and that none of it's real." Have you heard that one before? Faith just comes from the menacing phenomena of nature and none of it is real. Nothing new under the sun, folks. "I say to myself, what if I've been believing all my life, and when I come to die, there's nothing but plants growing on my grave, as I read in some author. It's awful. How can I get back my faith? I only believed when I was a little child, mechanically, without thinking of anything. How is one to prove it? How can I prove it? How can I convince myself? Oh, how unhappy I am. I stand and look about me and see that scarcely anyone else cares. No one troubles his head about this, and I'm the only one who can't stand it. It's deadly, deadly." Right. This old Russian story written in 1880, nothing to say to us today because no one's ever had those questions before, right? No one here could ever possibly relate to this woman's experience. Friends, that's why we read good literature. Father Zosima says, "No doubt you're suffering, but there is no proving faith, though you can be convinced of it." Let me say that one again. There is no proving faith, but you can be convinced of it. You can be convinced of it by the experience of active love. Strive to love your neighbor actively and tirelessly. And as far as you advance in love, you will grow surer of the reality of God and of the immortality of your soul. If you attain to perfect self-forgetfulness in the love of your neighbor, then you will believe without doubt, and no doubt can possibly enter your soul. This has been tried. This way is certain. Real person-to-person love, friends, will help this woman and you and me grow sure of the reality of God. And the key is self-forgetfulness in the love of neighbor. It's almost like Jesus knows what he's saying when he says, whoever loses his life, whoever forgets himself, whoever loses his life for my sake and the sake of the gospel will save it. It's almost like he knows what he's talking about. Now the woman goes on. In active love, there's another question, and such a question. You see, I so love humanity that, would you believe it? I often dream of forsaking all that I have and become a sister of mercy. I close my eyes and think and dream. And at that moment, I feel full of strength to overcome all obstacles. No wounds, no festering sores could at that moment frighten me. I would bind them up and wash them with my own hands. I would be ready to kiss such wounds. Father Zosima said, it is much, and well that your mind is full of such dreams and not others. Sometime, unawares, you may actually do a good deed in reality. See, he's saying, well, that's a nice start. It's good to have good dreams and not bad ones. Good thoughts and not bad thoughts. But they're never enough, are they? And this is what the lady responds. Yes, but could I endure such a life for long? The lady went on fervently, almost frantically. This, by the way, is where she starts to sound like a Gen Zer. That's the chief question. That's my most agonizing question. I shut my eyes and I ask myself, would you persevere long on that path? And if the patient whose wounds you are watching did not meet you with gratitude, but worried you with his whims, without valuing or remarking upon your charitable services, and if he began abusing you or rudely commanding you, what then? Would you persevere in your love or not? And do you know I came with horror to the conclusion that if anything could dissipate my love to humanity, it would be ingratitude. In short, I'm a hired servant. I expect my payment at once, that is praise and the repayment of love with love. Otherwise, I am incapable of loving anyone. She was in a very paroxysm of self-castigation. And concluding, she looked with defiant resolution at the elder. What's to be done? What can one do in such a case? Must one despair? Again, friends, she's asking, what would happen if I actually committed to a life of real love instead of just thinking about it? What if love actually made a claim? Would I be willing to allow it to? Father Zosima, no, it is enough that you are distressed at it. Do what you can, and it will be reckoned unto you. Much is done already in you since you can so deeply and sincerely know yourself. See, he's being kind to her here. He's pointing out what's good in her. He's a good priest. And he's a good priest, because here comes truth that she needs to hear. If you have been talking to me so sincerely, simply to gain approbation for your frankness as you did for me just now, then of course you will not attain to anything in the achievement of real love. Truth. She's living a fantasy. She's living in her head. She's living in her dreams. Of course, you will not attain to anything in the achievement of real love. It will get no further than dreams. And your whole life will slip away like a phantom. I am sorry I can say nothing more consoling to you. For love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. What a great story. Friends, aren't we all quite a bit like this woman, wondering if we really believe. And if we do, is it really real? And how could we know for sure? And even if we say we believe, isn't it nice to just keep that belief in the realm of theory rather than letting it radically change the way we actually live? Kind of like just loving humanity in general, dreaming about doing great things for people, but being scared of what that actually means concretely in our lives. Aren't we all ready to love in our dreams? But then we back away when it would make a claim on us, when it would cost us. Well, to that reality, and it is reality, God gives a way forward in the scriptures tonight. So we'll start with the metaphors, the gospel. You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, salt and light. They're good metaphors because they don't exist for themselves. They only make sense in relation to what they give. Salt gives flavor. Light gives illumination. And that's the law of the gift that St. John Paul II talked about so frequently. Make your life a gift. Jesus in Luke 6 says, "Give and gifts will be given to you. A good measure, packed together, shaken down, and overflowing will be poured into your lap. For the measure with which you measure will in turn be measured out to you." So give. Erasmo Maricacus, he says, "Do we not often want to be the receivers rather than the givers? And do we not in this way become insipid and dark? Me. Provide for me. What do I want? What do I need? My life, even spiritually, God, provide for me." He goes on, "Christ has communicated to the disciple his own substance, the salt and light of divinity. And these turn and become rancid and corrupt if they are not further communicated at once." God gives so that we can give, and in that we become ourselves. That means real action, the experience of active love, as Father Zosima says. Or as Dr. Boyle, who is here visiting from the University of St. Thomas, said to me when I was asking him what students need most right now, he said, contact with reality. Contact with reality, especially the reality of giving to those in need. Because friends, look, we're all wounded in some way tonight, every one of us in this chapel. Maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's an internal attitude you have, maybe it's in the area of your faith. Every one of us who came through these chapel doors walks in wounded. And God wants to heal those wounds. But he gives us a unique way of entering into that healing, a way that, once again, as Father Zosima says, has been tried, a way that is certain. So the first reading from Isaiah. "Thus says the Lord, share your bread with the hungry, shelter the oppressed and homeless, clothe the naked when you see them, and do not turn your back on your own. And then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your wound shall quickly be healed. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, 'Here I am.'" When we concretely and truly love others, then our light shall break forth like the dawn, scattering our darkness, and our wounds shall quickly be healed. That's why the church gives us the corporal and spiritual works of mercy. All of these listed on your little holy card. I want you to take those with you. I want you to know them and learn them. It's why we put them at the exit of the chapel, so that it would be the last thing you would see before you leave. Listen, none are easy because, as Dostoevsky writes, Love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. But they're all so necessary. They're all so good for us because they'll bring the healing we seek. The great Dorothy Day, she said once that everything a baptized person should do ought to be directly or indirectly related to the corporal and spiritual works of mercy. Everything. Look over your day. Is everything that you do directly or indirectly related to these? It's a good place to pray. Listen, the best way to come to truly believe, to truly have faith, share that faith then by means of active, concrete love. The best way to come to healing, take care of those whose needs are greater than yours. Take care of the poor in real and concrete ways. Dedicate yourself to the experience of active love. Put your faith to work. And then watch what the Lord will accomplish.